Welcome to Nightlight. Step away from the mainstream and gather around as we help enlighten the world around us and travel this cosmic journey we call life. Join us as we share with you and provide that beacon that can guide us all to a better way. Nightlight, a reminder that you are never alone. And now your host, internationally renowned spiritual intuit, medium, channel, author, artist, lecturer, and ordained minister, Ms. Barbara DeLong.
Thank you, and welcome everyone. That was the magical voice of Ken Quiet Hawk, inviting you to come in out of the mainstream and join with us for a time to be sheltered from the storms of evolution and change, that which we call creation. Come and join with other light-minded spirits as we weave our lights together to seek understanding, enlightenment, and hopefully wisdom. These are times of change, times that call to the light workers, and you answer that call from all walks of life, from countless aspects of the spiritual realms. This is a time of awakening, of sharing and evolving, of spreading your wings and soaring on the cosmic breath of creation. We all come from different backgrounds and modalities, from all walks of life, and yet there is a synchronicity, a commonality that draws and blends us together, weaving us once more into a collective purpose, a common direction, and a united family once again. We go by different titles: watchers, wardens, indigos, soothsayers, mystics, questers, querents, journeyers and journeymen, seekers, star children, philosophers, light workers, light bearers, and the list, gosh, it goes on and on and on. It is as unique and eclectic as are we. Yet we all have the same spiritual calling, and we all, in our own way, bring light into the reality to facilitate the awakening and shifting of the consciousness for all of mankind. This is my own very private oasis in the turmoil we call evolution, so sit back, take a break, share your lights with us, and join in the love, the light, and the laughter that spiritual energy always generates when lights are blended and spirits lifted. I'm Barb DeLong, your host, and along with Jeannie and Rachel, we welcome you in and hope you'll add your lights to ours to increase the energy and brighten all of our personal lights. We'll be doing readings shortly, and if you would like to call in for one, the number is 347-857-2139, and then press 1 so Jeannie knows to screen you. She is in the chat room, and she can answer any questions you may have. I don't multitask well, so she's the one you have to IM. Ken Quiet Hawk can be found at nativestorytellers.com if you want to experience more of that amazing voice. I'm at barbaradelong.com. And Rachel can be found at ravenswhisper.com. She's also in the chat room if you want to bug her. I'm fine with that. Rachel is somebody that I work with on a very regular basis. She does most of the fairs that I do, and she is probably one of the loveliest and best psychics that deal with animals and mediums and all sorts of stuff. She is an amazing lady. She is sensitive, she is intuitive, she is spiritual up the wazoo, and she has a wonderful, gentle sense of humor that helps her to kind of find what it is exactly that is needed and help to serve it up in a way that is most accepting and wonderful. And it is always kind of fun to sit back and listen to her as she reads, because there is obviously There are obviously generations of lifetimes that have been spent in doing this work. Her craft is definitely honed well and used appropriately, and she is the kind of person that you want to send everybody to, because no matter what the problem, no matter what the difficulty, she always seems to find a way of opening the channels so that healing can take place and understanding and insight can be shared. So I welcome Rachel to the show. Hi, Rachel. How's it going today?
Hi, Barbara. You humble me with such a great and grand introduction.
I just channeled it, you know, it kind of, you know, I don't like reading intros to people. I like to just say whatever comes. So it's well deserved. I mean, goodness, we have worked together for a couple years now anyhow.
At least a millennium.
It does feel like it some days.
Mm-hmm.
But I one of the things I know that you do spirit communication, and as do I. But everybody who does it a different way and comes upon it, you know, in a different way. So how did the fact that you could touch into to the animals, how did that start to sort of blossom in your tool belt of tools there?
How did it blossom? Well, I've already told everyone the story of doing an internship where I heard the dolphins talk to me. And then after that, I just started having just experiences. I first of all, I thought I was crazy because it happened, and I thought, no, they can't actually be talking to me. What does this mean? And then I had realized that I had several experiences from when I was a very little girl where animals would curl up on my lap and tell me things about their owners or about you know, illnesses or things that were going on. And I just thought that this was kind of something that it just seemed so intrinsic to me that I just thought that everyone could do it. And then just having a complete love of animals, I just wanted to know more, and I studied more and studied animal behavior in school and put myself in places where I could do internships with dolphins and wolves and elephants and all sorts of creatures, and found that I just had a knack for it and loved it. And
is there one breed species that you are more attracted to than others, or do they all seem to just open up for you?
Well, they all have a different sentiment, I think. But I think the one that I'm most attracted to are dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I think I think dogs are a lot like people. They have pack mentality and want to be in groups and have an incredible social structure, family structure. That I, you know, and of course they're, you know, obviously domesticated, so they go through our day-to-day lives with us. But I think each breed, each species has a, you know, different gifts to teach us and different manners in which they talk and different things that they can impart on us.
Okay, so you know, I do some spirit communication, you know, dogs and cats, you know, and an occasional, you know, dog-like or cat-like entity I can handle. There are some that I just, you know, really don't want to talk to. You know, scaly ones would be, you know, I think I'd be okay with an iguana, but I don't like snakes. And is there, you know, I'm wondering if there is a hierarchy in the animal kingdom. For instance, every year I am plagued with ants. Now, is there a consciousness there that can be addressed? Is there some way to communicate with them, or is it just easier to kill them?
Well, I think, as you know, from our experience the other day, I'd much rather carry them outside
yes.
than kill them, as tedious as that can be. But there is a consciousness, but I find that with some of the lower levels, like the insects, they have just a certain level of mentality that they're focused on in present terms, you know, and it's a lot more primitive than, say, a domestic breed.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, of course you can talk to them. I've worked for several beekeepers that I've talked to, bees to find out what's going on in the environment. And of course, I get referred to the queen bee because she's the one that makes decisions. And,
okay.
and it's an interesting energy because they all kind of, you know, communicate as a whole.
Yeah, there are some, you know, bees, ants are another one that they're kind of like the, I can't remember, in Star Trek, you know, they have a group consciousness.
The drones, yeah.
So I'm just wondering, because there have been times when, you're outside and you're bugged by the bugs, and mm-hmm. you do wonder if there is some sort of energetic you can put out there that will gently, if you have to, repel them. You know, it just seems to me that I know from experience that I can, when I calm myself and quiet myself, I can get pictures from the cats and I can give them, you know, suggestions and stuff like that. And the same thing with a dog, not a puppy. Puppies don't have any consciousness at all, but dogs,
uh-huh.
you know, once they're over puberty, do respond. But
yeah.
And horses, of course, there are, you know, horse whisperers. There are, you know, you just look in their eyes and you know there's consciousness there, and pigs and you know a lot of the farm animals. But then you get into the itty bitty things, and they don't seem to respond as well to suggestion and you know, go elsewhere. This is not good. Don't stay here. You're going to get killed. So you know, I'm wondering if there is a cutoff point to, you know, I was very impressed when there was a bug on somebody's person. You gently took it and took it outside. I thought that was very sweet. I you know, Patrick was the same way with the ants that invaded the house. You know, he felt, you know, they have a right to live too, and so I would, you know, if he was around, it was Camp Cook and everybody. And when he was gone, it was the concentration camp, and I was actually sending them on to their next incarnation. So, you know, it's kind of like I keep wondering if there is sort of a place where the line is drawn, where communication isn't as easy as others. Butterflies and fireflies and grasshoppers and dragonflies and stuff like that. I know that if I'm sitting out in the garden and I'm meditating and I'm inviting butterflies, I do get butterflies. So I do know that they don't come in to, here's what you know, I really want to know. When I have been taught, and it doesn't mean that it's the way it is, it's just what I have been taught, that animals respond to pictures, not words. In your experience, is it pictures or words that you send?
It depends on who I'm talking to. I think normally I picture myself saying the words, but think about it. If you think orange, you know, the word orange, you see an orange or you see the color orange.
Yeah.
So I think we naturally translate into pictures.
Mm-hmm.
I know certain breeds, non-domesticated animals, for instance, will often give me the feelings or the pictures much more clearly than a sentence or a word or a block of vibration.
Okay, so if you were talking to, for instance, a non-domesticated wolf,
mm-hmm.
how would you do that? I mean, do you need to be close enough to make eye contact? Do you need to be in the vicinity? How do you do that?
I basically do a meditation, and I contact their spirit.
Okay. How do you isolate the singular spirit? I mean, you know, there's a wolf that's eating all of my sheep. I want to contact him and tell him not to do it anymore and to go to my neighbor's house who I don't like, you know, or something like that.
I would basically, how I do it is I picture the animal in my mind.
Okay.
And I picture the right consciousness that is coming here. So I would picture them in your garden or in your, you know, with your sheep.
Okay.
And then ask for one consciousness to step forward.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so you invite a presence then.
Yes.
That makes sense. Now, how does this translate, because it has to on some level, to animal totems, and how, you know, everyone has an animal totem, or it's not that we're all Native Americans, but on a spiritual level, our spirits have been inclined towards an animal that becomes a totem in spirit. And again, my experience, not necessarily the rule of thumb.
I'm not sure what you're asking. How does it translate, and how do I contact an animal totem, or
how do you know what someone's animal totem is?
Okay. Well, in that way, what I would do is close my eyes and in my mind's eye picture the person, and then see what shows up in their field. Much like when you're doing spirit communication, when you're trying to see if there's someone who stepped forward with this person.
Yeah.
I would wait to see if there are animals. You know, I would ask for which animals are in their field, and I would look in their field and see, you know, which totems are present.
There was a lady a while back who, and I had someone on the show, and we were talking about animal totems, and I have a drop or two of Native American blood, not enough to have me have any sense of direction, but I am, you know, I do have Native blood in my veins, so you know, I'm comfortable, familiar, and you know, there is that element of, you know, of course, you know, I have an animal totem. But somebody said, well, I don't have any Native American blood, so I don't have an animal totem, and I that didn't feel right to me. Is that, you know, how would you have answered her? I just felt that everybody would have one if they wanted one.
No, I think we pick up animal totems just like we pick up guides along our journeys. And I don't think it has anything to do with any particular lineage or heritage.
No, I just, you know, everybody wants to have, you know, the bears and the wolves and the eagles and doves and stuff like that, but in my experience, when people have, you know, genuinely asked me, you know, sometimes I get things like turtles and frogs and you know, they're all valid totems, and they all carry wisdom. You know, there isn't one that you know is, oh, it sucks to be this. What I love about the totems is that no matter how unusual they are, they have great wisdom and insight and power behind them. So that, you know, having a turtle as your totem is not a bad thing. It's really one that is a very powerful totem. They all are, actually. I don't think there's any totem that isn't a good one.
No, even the scaly ones, Barbara.
Yeah, well, that's not for this lifetime for sure. My philosophy is that phobias actually, you know, come from traumas in past lifetimes. I must have had some doozies, because I truly, you know, angleworms to me are just snakes in training. And even though I do garden, when I see an angleworm, I give it wide range. I don't kill them, but I do kind of back away and say, okay, you can have the garden for today. I don't think I really need to be there. So you have been doing this work for quite a long time. It's amazing for me to hear people's stories as to how they came to this field. How did you come to this time and place where you claimed your craft and worked it?
Okay. Well, I think I've always had an interest in the occult, Barbara. And then I always speak about the internship that basically changed my life, that where I worked with dolphins and had that experience with dolphins pulling me out of a patch of fire coral.
Oh, wow.
I had spontaneous recall after that. Was just in a place of, I was in my early 20s and really was exploring different aspects of life and where I wanted to go, and I was traveling quite a bit, and started taking spiritual classes. And it just worked for me. It just all of a sudden something opened up and blossomed, and it was so me. I love to travel. I did an apprenticeship fair with one of my tarot instructors, and then I just kept meeting people that were going to the next fair and the next fair and the next fair, and I basically traveled for a good 6 months doing this. And it was something that I could use at different parts of my life, you know, something I could work when I needed to and explore in different pathways, and it's just really taken on kind of a life of its own.
Well, so in essence, you were a gypsy for a while.
Yes.
I think that's terrific. I did 8 years summers only in the 14th century in the Renaissance, and it is an amazing atmosphere, and just it's magical. It truly is. It's grueling, and it's a lot of hard work, but it is amazing to transfer yourself into a whole other century for a time frame and sort of be involved and surrounded by that period of time. And I mean, I just loved working with the actors. They were phenomenal.
Right.
I'm going to pull Jeannie on here because she typed me a question. I'm going to let her ask it. Hi, Jeannie. You're on the air.
Hi. How are y'all? Do you hear all this buzzing from
my
phone?
I do.
Sorry.
The snakes are busy tonight. You had a question for Rachel.
Yeah. I was going to ask her. She does all these wonderful things with animals. I had a husky that passed away suddenly a few years back, and I was wondering if you could tell me anything about him. His name was Tyson.
Was Tyson?
Tyson, Ty. We called him Ty.
Okay. Hold on a minute. Oh, was Tyson a particularly big dog? He just feels like he has a big personality.
He was, yes, he was. Very much so.
And it just seemed like just a ton of fur, which, of course, that's no big surprise with a husky.
Well, he was only 5 years old when he passed, and we were very surprised that he passed.
Did you ever get an answer on why he passed?
No.
Jeannie?
Okay. No, we have no idea why he passed.
All right. When I touch into him, I'm getting something around the stomach, something around the organs. And I'm not sure if it was the stomach. I have a feeling it was more like liver that was giving him. There was some problem there because I get kind of an acidy feeling in his stomach.
Uh-huh.
Okay. I don't feel like he was in a tremendous amount of pain.
Oh, good.
And I believe it was pretty much a surprise to him as well.
Ah.
Do you have children?
Do I have children? Yes.
Yes. Okay. Because I keep seeing this doll that he had, and it felt like it belonged to someone special.
What is it that he had?
It to me it kind of looks like a doll, but I don't really get it in.
He had stuffed animals of every kind. He loved anything like that. He could carry it around like it was his baby.
Okay. All right. It just seems like there was one in particular that he really was quite attached to that I get with him. He had a very maternal or paternal element to him.
Mm-hmm, very much so.
Really was the consummate protector there, but also was a cuddler, a snuggler.
Mm-hmm.
Really enjoyed being with the family. And he shows me images of going for a trip to see somebody. I had a feeling like this might be your mom.
No.
I think it's a female. It doesn't feel like it's a very long trip, but it seemed like there was preparation, like every so often you'd go.
Yeah, he ran next door and we could never catch him.
Okay. So he had a bit of a scoundrel aspect to him.
Just a little. All character.
Yeah, huskies are often the breed that is just, I'm never quite sure what I'm going to get when I speak to them. Because they certainly have a mind of their own. Let me see what else. Yeah, I keep going back to the stomach on this one, Jeannie. It keeps showing me back. back around the stomach as being a reason that he passed.
Well, we had no idea why. He was happy the night before, and the next morning when we got up, he was outside, and he was gone. He was just laying outside up against the house.
Right. Yeah, he shows me laying outside. It was very peaceful for him, by the way. I didn't feel like there was any fear or any, like I said, pain.
Uh-huh.
You know, it felt like it was just, you know, kind of like he was dreaming and just didn't wake up. And I believe
just
he was
kind of trotted out of his body and went on back home?
Yeah, literally. Literally just that easy.
Hang around me or anywhere in particular?
He does. I see there's a place, I think it was in the kitchen or something, that he would sit. I believe I'm looking at like a what looks like maybe sliding glass doors or a door to the backyard or something like that he would look out of, and I see him kind of just hanging out there.
Yeah, he would hang out right there, if you're right.
Right.
He was a very unique husky. This husky loved Pop-Tarts. He would do anything for a Pop-Tart.
Mm-hmm. He almost doesn't feel like a husky, Jeannie. He feels, I get the build and the look, but he almost feels kind of almost like a floppy dog. Like there was something kind of undone about him.
He was very unusual.
Very relaxed.
He was very heavy for a husky.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just a hot mess, you know. He would tease a lot. And it's like we would go to give him a milk bone, and he wanted to take it outside. Well, you couldn't give him the milk bone and him take it. You had to open the door, hold it in front of him. As he walked through the door, he would take the bone.
Oh, okay. So he had his own rules.
Very much so. He was a mess. But, well, then he's doing good.
No, he's absolutely fine. Like I said, I still feel like he hangs out in the kitchen when you're cooking, like when you're cooking dinner and such.
Mm-hmm.
And, and he still, you know, watches out for the house and whatnot. So he's still
good.
Close to Eugenie.
Good. Huh. Well, that's very interesting about his stomach and his liver. That's, because we had no idea why he passed.
Right. And I don't feel that he was suffering with anything.
Uh-huh.
You know, didn't feel like it was, I feel like it was something that just didn't develop in him properly or something. I don't feel like it was something that you could find, unless you really were looking for something.
It wasn't because of any neglect or anything like that?
Oh, absolutely not.
Oh, good.
No. I don't think you should, I don't think you can even ask that question. I don't think you neglected him at all or didn't pay attention, you know. I think you were very present with him. He feels like a very loved and spoiled dog.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Great.
So I don't feel that it was anything that you missed at all.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
No
that
problem.
Was good.
Okay, I'm going to send you back to work, Jean.
Thank you, I guess.
Bye. while we have the chance here, and those of you interested in a reading, the number is 347-857-2139. And when you get through and you hear that lovely British accent saying Blog Talk Radio, press the number 1 so you hold your hand up and we know that you're interested in a reading. The other thing that I really wanted to sort of investigate with you tonight, if there's time, and it appears we have some time I can utilize to kind of get into this. There is an aura. There is something going on in the world, and it does feel like that old feeling of a shoe's going to drop or something's going to happen, I don't normally react to stuff like this, but it's been going on for so long. And you know, as I look into the news and read on the internet, it apparently something is building. Now, I don't know what it is, but have you had that feeling as well?
Oh, absolutely, Barbara. The only thing I can really attribute to is you know, certain things that are going on astrologically. But I know that, you know, I have that sense. And, of course, you know, it's very apparent in the news and the press. But also with all of my clients. They all feel like, you know, and a lot of them have worked through a lot of big issues in the last year, but feel, you know, and nothing is really going wrong for them right now, but they feel like it is. They
yeah.
feel like nothing is, like it's everything is coming undone, and they don't have an idea as to why.
Yeah, I'm getting, you know, the same thing. I'm getting people literally saying to me, I just feel like something's going to happen, and I don't know what I can do, and I don't know how I can prepare. I don't, you know, they're all of them feeling something's coming, and I'm not preaching, you know, doom here. I'm just saying that the energies are so unusual for this time of year, because we're coming into the holiday time, and we're coming into, you know, a festive time, and yet just this last couple of weeks, it feels like it, and I've read stuff on the internet that is definitely bothersome and worrisome.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, do you have any idea what it is? I feel kind of like there is a larger awakening coming upon people, and in many ways, it feels like they're going to have to sort of take another look at their reality and how they're living in it, manifesting in it, and you know, utilizing their spiritual energy in it. But so many people are unsettled by it, and of course, nobody likes change, but do you have any feeling about this?
You know, I'm not really sure, because I feel like I'm caught up in it myself. So I don't have a really good answer for that. You know, what to do, how to handle it. I know a lot of people are dealing with, you know, just a lot of things that, you know, I know areas for a lot of my clients and for myself that have been stuck for years are starting to finally move,
mm-hmm.
you know. And it does, but it does feel like there's something bigger coming, like, you know, like it's not just change, it's like big change, you know, humongous change,
yeah.
humongous transformation. And I don't. I really don't have a very good answer for that. I'm sorry.
Well, the first place you look, of course, is politics. But you know, I don't even want to go there because I think it's above and beyond all of that. And I'm finding a much greater fascination with past lives than ever before.
Okay.
And it's just it's almost like people are looking for, where are my talents? What are my gifts? How do I bring them forward? How do I utilize them? And at first, if I think back, I would say 10 years ago, past lives were, you know, everybody wanted to be the Queen of Sheba and Cleopatra and Mark Anthony and stuff like that. But you know, it was just a yuck thing, and it was for fun. Now people understand that past lives do bring with them the gifts of the time, the wisdom of the time, and the experience of the time. And people are more and more and more reaching into the past to prepare themselves for the future. And I'm blown away by the number of people that call in and ask for past lives, which I love to give. But you know, it's sort of like there is this sudden new swing of interest and focus on past lives and, you know, where are my gifts? What are my passions? And that's the other thing. I always talk to people about their passions and finding them and incorporating them into their realities to enrich the totality of their experience here.
Mm-hmm.
And it fascinates me watching the things that people are asking. There is a marked decrease in, you know, the relationship and the job questions, and more and more and more, it's of a spiritual nature that people, you know, are looking for information on, which I'm fascinated by.
Mm.
But you know, it's the past life stuff that I find, you know, really intriguing, because nobody really cared about them until just recently, and now it's every time I turn around, it's, you know, what was I in a past life, and you know, what did I do in past lives, and where did I find whatever, yada, you know, that whole thing. And I find it fascinating that not only are people coming for the readings, which you know, they always have and always will, I'm sure, but now they're being more spiritually specific as to what they're looking for. And I find that just awesome.
Yeah, I think I've seen just a kind of a decrease in the outside questions, if you will, like, you know, what will they be doing in the world, et cetera. And since, mm-hmm. I would say about 9/11, you know, people started to look it more inward to, you know, how can I manifest and how can I be all I can be, if you will, you know.
Right.
And where
take
can I go from
of
here?
Reality. Yeah.
Yeah, they're taking more responsibility, more control over, you know, where they're going, how they've created, what they've, you know, what they're here living, and, you know, how can we fix this? How can we move forward?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it's just, no, you can't get on the cards. Somehow cats don't listen, no matter how you send them the message. Yeah, no, it's really, it fascinates me. And you know, I talk to Jeannie every day, and she'll ask me, you know, well, was there a theme to the fair? Was there a particular theme that you know, people were asking, you know, and usually there is. Usually people clump, you know, you get a whole bunch of relationship stuff or work stuff or, you know, or past life stuff or spiritual stuff. And I find more and more and more often now it's leaning more towards the spiritual aspects as opposed to the other stuff, which is great. We've got Donna in Boston. Going to pull her on. Hi, Donna. Are you there?
Hi, Barbara. I'm in California, but I will be going to Boston. My elderly friend has asked me to come there and help him out, and I wondered if that was going to go well and if I was going to meet somebody.
Okay. Rachel?
Hi, Rachel. How are you?
I'm good, Donna. How are you?
Thank you. I'm good.
Now, let me clarify. You're going to Boston?
Well, my friend has asked me to go there, yes, you know, to take care of him, and I'll have my own room there. I'll keep my apartment here in California. I have my sister here living with me. And, you know, so I'll experience Boston. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. It feels kind of like a spiritually enriching time. Meaning like you give a lot while you're there and you get a lot while you're there. It also feels slightly uncomfortable because you'll be living in a smaller space and kind of taking care of someone else. So
yes,
it
I will be taking care of him. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a bigger house, though, but it's a smaller space as far as the town, yeah.
Right. Now you're asking if you'll meet someone romantically there?
Yeah.
You're interested in? I do feel kind of a pull to kind of almost be in both places, like you're not sure where you want to end up. I do feel like you develop some new outlets there, some new creative outlets. And I think there might be a gentleman there. I do feel like there's someone in the, you know, I feel kind of like the twinges of a beginning a relationship with someone out there. I also feel a couple core groups of friends. Like, I don't know if you do yoga or something like that, but kind of getting involved in some groups because I feel like you want to get out. You want to get out of the house at night, do things.
Yeah, definitely. I will want to do that, yeah. Can't stay cooped up in a house all day and, you know, with the snow and all. You know,
right.
I've never lived in the snow.
Yeah, we're very familiar with the snow.
Right.
Yeah, I'm. I have to go along with Rachel on this. More than anything else, I see, you know, a new circle of friends. There may well be a gentleman there, but I don't see anything, you know, that is emerging at this moment in time. Doesn't mean that there won't be one, but it does feel as though you're going to find yourself very, very busy. It does feel as though that there. There will be a lot of things that you're going to be doing, and free time is going to be at a premium for a while here. I don't see things opening up for you. How long had you planned on staying?
Indefinitely. Indefinitely.
Well,
he called me Sunday and said he'd like me to come out. He has a nice room for me and everything. And he said that somebody would be calling me this week. I don't know who that can be. I mean, he does have physical therapy 3 times a week, or, you know, maybe they're going to call to make sure I am coming out there. And, you know, I mean, I don't know who's going to be calling me. A lawyer called me? I have no idea. I should have asked him, but I didn't.
Yeah, I have the feeling that this gentleman can't live alone any longer.
Yeah, I believe that, too. Yeah.
So it feels like there may be.
He's 90.
Yeah, I think that there may be family members and absolutely a lawyer involved here as well. So that I am seeing the possibility of you having to sign some legal papers of some sort.
Oh, okay. I know he wanted to make me the power of attorney and the executor of the will. He has one sister. She's 95. She lives in Canada. I've known him for 35 years, and I'm kind of like the closest thing to him, like
okay.
a daughter. Yeah.
Well, I just think, like I said, there may be some family here that you had not known were there, whether it's nieces and nephews or whether it's, I have no idea. I just feel that there is family that, you know, will be concerned that he's appropriately cared for, and certainly I don't see that there would be any problem. It seems to me that, you know, you're going to do a very good job.
Oh, yeah, and I've done this kind of work before, so it's not new to me, you know.
Well,
I'm looking forward to doing something. I'm looking forward to being productive again, you know.
Well, I think it's a very kind thing you're doing, and I'm sure it will be greatly appreciated.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks a lot for calling.
Well, thank you so much, Barbara, and thank you, Rachel. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, it's a kind thing somebody does to go help somebody out that isn't family. That's a very generous soul. I do want to get back to this energy that we're going through, because Blog Talk Radio got attacked a while back. And it was interesting, you know, switchboards went down. There was all sorts of, there was trouble with switchboards. There was trouble with chat rooms. There was trouble with sound. There was, and it wasn't that, you know, I'm not sure exactly what the problem was, but I know a lot of us had almost a week of difficulty that way. And I don't know if it was people hacking it or if it was sun flares or what. But again, energetically, there's a ton of stuff going on here. And the more I look into things, the more I get that feeling that something is brewing. And you know, I see the great big witch's kettle, and I see something brewing in it. And again, I'm not talking evil. I'm talking energetically. So, you know, please, everybody, don't. I'm not predicting evil is going to run through the streets and take us all by surprise, because that's not what I'm seeing. What I'm seeing is energetically, we all are being bombarded with new energy. And I think all of us are handling it in different ways. Some of us are having anxiety attacks. Some of us are sleeping more than normal. Some of us are nervous as all get out, because there's a feeling that the change is coming. So it's really amazing how all of us are reacting differently to this, but again, it's hitting all of us in different ways. I know people that are suddenly having all sorts of arguments with everybody around them for no reason. And so you know, there's a lot going on here, I think, above and beyond what we would like to blame it on. So again, is there an ascension? Is there an opening of awareness? Is there a stretching of our capabilities? Is there a need to reach for even deeper, more intensive gifts that are carried within? I think, spiritually speaking, we're all being sent to, you know, to our cupboards to see what we have to share and what we have to incorporate into our realities. How do you feel about that?
I think definitely that seems where everyone is kind of spinning with this newer energy, you know, looking for, you know, like I said, I've certainly seen it within my own clients that they're looking inward more now than ever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think in some ways it's almost because it, for some people, some of the outward things aren't working or aren't working fast, I noticed, you know, with the economy the way it is, jobs the way they are right now, things like that, that people are looking for, you know, how can I be better? What can I do? You know, what can I bring to the table?
Okay, you know, that's a really good, yeah, and Jeannie is asking, could the rules of the games be changing? And I think they are. I think they definitely are. So while we wait for people to line up, because they haven't lined up quite the way I would like before we start the readings, let's just kind of take a look at, and I'm throwing cards down here, what would your advice be, and I've got cards out, you know, addressing the same thing, what would your advice be to someone or to those people who are really looking for, you know, what can I do in times like this? What would your advice be to them?
Well, one of my, you know, favorite things is when things aren't working in the outside world. I go inward and I start working on my home and my relationships. And I do things make sure that I'm nurtured and cared for and I'm getting enough sleep and eating well and that I'm completely balanced, you know. Then I often go to my closets and I start purging. because
yeah, no,
I believe
that's a good
in
thing.
That. Yeah, and I believe that that old feng shui saying, if you want to change your life, change your closets, clean your closets. You know,
great wisdom there.
And I've seen it happen a million times in my own life when I feel stuck in places. And I have that frustration when I'm going through a change period.
A very wise woman once told me, if your closet's in order, so is your life. And I think she was absolutely right.
Oh, I believe it. You can completely walk into my home at any particular time, Barbara, and tell in a second where my mind is. You know, by how cluttered or uncluttered my kitchen counter is.
That is great advice. And and on top of that, I think that I would advise people, because these are times of change, that on top of bringing yourself into balance, which is, you know, absolutely crucial to dealing with any change, and change is always good. It's not always comfortable, but it's always good. It means that you've outgrown something, and it's time to stretch yourself into a new aspect or area of your reality. but also, it and I speak often of finding your passions and incorporating them into what it is you're doing and how you're working with other people, reaching for those gifts and talents that. You haven't had time to reach for before this. And no matter what your age, I truly believe that it's crucial that you know what your passions are. More and more, I hear myself saying that, and the reality is, yes, it makes your life so much richer if you can determine what your passions are and incorporate them into your everyday life. Now, you don't have to suddenly quit your job and become an angleworm farmer or something like that, but it is a good hobby, and passions do become hobbies. They become avocations, and sometimes, if you're really, really lucky, they become a vocation. And the only way to get that evolution in motion is to bring it into the reality, acknowledge it, claim it, embrace it, and see where it goes. So often we have talents that we just don't utilize, and we kind of poo-poo them as though, you know, well, that's not serious, and it can't possibly in any way help me through whatever mess I'm in. And one of the things that you know, I've told people, just even printing out mandalas and coloring them becomes a meditation, and it opens you to a lot of the possibilities that are in your life. So, you know, determining what your passions are and sort of listing them so that you can use them when times are stretched and times are challenging is really, really important. And you know, it's easier to tell a woman than a man, to be honest with you, because most women have some area that you know is of a creative nature that they have done in the past that they put aside because life got in the way. Men, it's a little harder, but men do have the creative filaments to utilize. They just don't identify them as creative. You know, it can be anywhere from building or restoring or you know, touching antiques and bringing them back to life, or working on car engines and restoring stuff, or creating new jobs, or creating helping people to create things within their own lives. I mean, one of the greatest things people can do is to volunteer for Habitats for Humanity. I mean, that in and of itself helps to stretch, you know, their talents, their gifts. And they don't have to be good at it. They just have to, well, know which end of the hammer to use, I guess. But it's kind of important that we know where our talents are. And so many of us have never bothered to identify them. So, you know, in order to identify them, I guess you start with lists, things you like to do, things you have fun doing. I know one of Jeannie's gifts, talents, whatever you want to call it, is she's amazing at doing genealogy or finding people that don't want to be found. She's remarkable at doing stuff like that. Now, is she going to make a living at it? Probably not, but she's good at it and she enjoys it, and she's lost herself for years in her family tree trying to find relatives that don't want to be found, or making connections with people that, you know, that there aren't any, but family insists that there are. I think we spent a month on one of the members of her family that swore she was related to, I mean, one of the presidents, and boy, she and I went crazy trying to trace different threads to see if we could make that connection. I don't think we've made it yet, so a cold winter night may be another time that we sit down and try to do that. But those kind of endeavors, and they're not supposed to cost money. Somebody said, you know, well, I get into my hobbies if I could afford them. They're not supposed to cost money. They're supposed to be things you do for the joy of it, things that are that don't cost money, that you can do in your spare time, and they're not going to hit your pocketbook, because if you have to pay for something, then there's something wrong with it. And I know a lot of people have expensive hobbies like photography and stuff like that, but you don't always have to take the pictures. You can work on learning how to refine them and learning how to touch them up and learning how to expand them. And there's tons of stuff you can learn that don't cost you money. And it's the same thing with sewing and making quilts and all sorts of things. So I think we're coming into a time where people's passions have to be, it's a good idea to have them identified so that you can start utilizing them and falling back on them. I don't know. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. Besides, when you're impassioned by something, I think it just brings more of a richness in your own spirit and just brings more of you to the table in all of your interactions. You know, I know
absolutely.
Just looking at my own life, just different periods of my life when I was just working and coming home, or going to school and coming home, and there was nothing there. You know, I always wanted to break out and do something more, and then the more engaged I am in other aspects of my life, not only does it interest me, but I find that I become more interesting to other people. You know, I have something to share and something to give.
And you know, so many people, I mean, the main question that you know, comes up almost everywhere all the time with readers and with people who are giving readings is, when am I going to meet my soulmate? And that's one of my favorite questions, because, you know, it's so easy to answer, and people, you know, just look at me like I'm totally crazy. And I probably am, but my advice is always, don't look, work on yourself, do things that give you joy, put yourself in places where you are joyful and celebrative, and you're having a good time. And other people who are doing the same thing, who are at the same place in time in their lives, you know, will be naturally drawn to the joy that is being radiated from you. Mm-hmm. And it's absolutely true. I mean, if I understand that, that the internet does provide a service. I understand that that not everybody wants to go to bars and dance on bars and stuff like that. But you know, you have to be responsible for your being a whole person in order, because you want to attract someone who is healthy and whole and doesn't need to be healed or mended or taught or given therapy to. You want to connect with somebody who has done the work on themselves the same as you have. And if you haven't done that work, then you have to do that work first before you go out looking or opening yourself up to the possibility and potential of a relationship. There's so much involved in attracting someone to you, and it in my opinion, and I know some people have met very nice people on dating services, but if you're looking for a soulmate, I think you have to have create the magnetism that draws that person to you, and you have to be whole within yourself. You can't go looking for someone to complete you. You have to be the completed person and be open to having to creating a relationship with somebody else who is in the same place. Is that about what you say, or have I left something out?
No, that's right on, Barbara. Now, what I find, do you believe that you can find soulmates, that there's many soulmates for every person?
Oh, absolutely. When you consider that we've been through thousands of lifetimes, I'm pretty sure that there's more than one person that we've had a good relationship with.
Right.
I would hate to think that there was only one.
True. I just find that that's in working with clients and working with clientele and whatnot, that at different levels that were of happiness in their life, they pull in, they attract different types of people to them at those different moments. And I always find that something that's very fascinating, that we can create, kind of our life, what we want to have in our life when we're at different levels. Those possibilities are endless, I suppose.
Well, yeah, and a soulmate, on top of the fact that I do believe that there certainly is more than one soulmate every lifetime for us, you can find soulmates that are the same gender as you are, and they become your best friends and your best friend for life. And it doesn't have to be a soulmate doesn't have to be someone you marry and live with happily ever after. A soulmate can be somebody that you are partners with in life and share good times and bad times. It can be someone that you are in business with or not. It can be a teacher that helps you to find greater wisdom inside of yourself and helps to pull you through a time of possible confusion or darkness. I think there are all different kinds of soulmates that touch our lives from time to time. And we draw them in. People are drawn to us by the energy that we radiate. And quite often, we're not ready for a love relationship, but we're certainly ready for a friendship relationship. And that, of course, is the foundation of all loving relationships anyhow. So it's sort of an unusual thing. I so many people think, well, this is my soulmate and they happen to be married to someone else, and it's like they may be your soulmate, but not for this lifetime. Yet they're taken, they're with someone else. I don't think people as a whole understand that the universe does in many ways cosmically manipulate us from time to time to put us in the pathway of someone who will enrich our lives, that will help us to move beyond where we are into another venue or another level of understanding or another aspect of being able to manifest our gifts and talents within our reality. I know that Patrick and I were drawn together, and there's no way that we ever would have met had it not been for Blog Talk Radio. And he was, he passed away. We were only together for 3 years, but he changed my life profoundly. Was he a soulmate? I think so. But I don't think he was the only soulmate that's on this planet for me. I think there are probably other people that will have a resonance, a synchronicity, and I may or may not run into them. I don't know, but I don't feel that he was the only possibility, and now that he's passed away, I have to spend the rest of my life alone. I don't believe that for a minute. So that there are any number of potential people out there that could be people call it a twin flame, I call it a soulmate, lots of different ways that you can term it, but I do believe that there are times in your life when a soulmate is attracted to you for a period of time, and their sympathy, their synchronicity, and their empathy help you to get through a difficult time, and then you move on. It doesn't mean that you have to be glued at the hip for the rest of your life. I mean, I have met and spent time with amazing people, but they did not flow along the same pathway that I did, and so they drifted off. They were on their own journeys, on their own pathways, and it just is sort of like they moved where they were supposed to go, and it's you touch but never linger sometimes. Sometimes it's a whole series of literal soulmates that help you through periods of time in your life when you're struggling and you need to have the insight of an objective person, and yet one who is spiritual and loving and isn't going to judge, but is going to, you know, sort of trigger things that you have within yourself that allow you to not succumb to despair and to, you know, find the hope within yourself to get beyond whatever challenge it is that you have in front of you. So have you met soulmates yourself this lifetime?
Oh, absolutely. It's always, sometimes it's so apparent when they come in, and other times I'll just be kind of reviewing life. And they're not always, people tend to use the term only for romantic relationships. I think that's a misnomer. And it always amazes me how they come in, how long they stay, that they're the perfect person at that particular moment to help me through something, to cheer me up when I most need it, to lend a hand when I most need it. And then oftentimes they just, continue on with their own journey. Someone described it to me once as a journey on a train, some people stay for several stops and some people stay the entire journey.
Mm-hmm.
But not everybody goes the same places.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. And that's not only, that's the case not only with relationships, but often friendships. Sometimes you have best friends that are with you for a period of time and then they're suddenly gone. And you kind of wonder what happened. Was it something I said? And the reality is that your commonalities dissipated as everybody grew in their own directions, and so that there was not that magnetism to hold you together anymore. But it doesn't mean that your life is empty, because you're putting out an energetic that is going to attract more people to you. And so mm-hmm. So no matter what, you're constantly attracting to yourself people that are appropriate to that time frame within your life. And there are some times in our lives when it's appropriate for us to be alone, to learn to love ourselves, to learn to understand ourselves, to work things out inside, and then when we finally have figured out what the issues were and stuff like that, then we sort of take those barriers down and allow other people into our lives, and it's a completely different group of people. I know when I look at my, the last, 3 or 4 decades of my life, there has been a small core group that has been there all along, but it's interesting how people have you know, the flow has ebbed and flowed. You know, sometimes there were huge groups of people, and sometimes it was just a few, but it was always what was most appropriate for me at that particular point in time. Still there?
Yes. Now I'm nodding in agreement.
Oh, okay. It's hard to see you nodding.
Yes, I'm psychically nodding, Barbara.
Okay.
I often wonder how that, you know, going into synchronicities, how is that arranged? You know, because sometimes I know for me in my life that I don't often feel, you know, like when I'm going through something that I have it all together, but then I look around and will often have the exact support that I need show up at the exact moment. And I always give a lot of thought to the synchronicities. Who arranges that? How does that get arranged? Is it a vibrational thing, you know, or is it our guides working for that, or a combination
I think,
of everything?
Well, before we come into each lifetime, and I explain it very irreverently, and it probably should be done with much better grace and skill and talent than I have, I think our spirits get to a place on the other side where they have lost all of the density, they are pure light, and they decide that they want to work on certain aspects of their own energetic. So they go into the reincarnation clinic, and they sit down with a counselor, and they say, look, these are the things that I want to work on. I want to be given experiences that allow me to develop this, 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 and this quality. And it's all put into a punch card. And when the counselor is satisfied that there is a proper balance in whatever is going on, the spirit is sent into a child's form, and it, a lifetime is already, you know, written out for it. And the thing is, we're so much of a being of light at that moment in time. We have no concept of difficulties and struggle and ambition and how ambitious we have been with what we have asked to be presented with. So that once in human form, the circumstances are in line for us to experience, for us to go through and to experience, so that those qualities and aspects of the soul are worked on, and we transcend the difficulties, and we have gathered what we needed to gather for that particular aspect of our own development. I do believe that as you're going through experiences, you are set, just as when you're complete, whole, and very content within your lives, you radiate a certain energy, that when you are going through other times, that you are radiating other energies. I've been through divorces, and I know both times when I was going through divorces, it was amazing. I kept meeting other people who were going through divorces too. So it was almost like, there was an attraction of commonalities there. So yes, in answer to your question, I do think that, I don't think it's arranged. I think it's almost a magnetism, that when you're at a place of time where you're going through a difficulty, it isn't that people are necessarily going to help you as much as support you to find what you need to find in order to overcome those things. If you see someone going through a difficulty, it's very appropriate to be compassionate and empathetic and everything. But if you try to intervene or interfere, you sort of guarantee that lesson, that challenge, will come back again in another place within life, so that person is going to be able to transcend whatever it is they need to learn to do. So yeah, I think there are people. I don't think it's a group of people out there that are here this lifetime to just be triggers to help people find what they need to find within themselves. I think that we attract to ourselves people who have been through what are going through, and our compassionate support systems, so that we can get to where we need to go. And I have found that when Patrick died, there were a tremendous number of people that were very supportive of me, and And it was amazing. Perfect strangers. Friends of my son in Nashville wrote a letter to me, you know, supportive of me, and they were just so compassionately lovely. It was wonderful. I have never met them. I don't know who they were, but they reached out at a time, and they obviously had to be in some way compelled on an energetic level to do what they did. And so I feel that our energy is almost open to support from other people, and because it's open, the support is there. And you know, whether it's going through the death of a loved one or the death of a pet, or if it's, you know, being traumatized by overwhelming school stuff or debt or a loss of a job or you know, whatever, I think that our energy does sort of send a signal out, and that signal is responded to by people who have a resonance for that kind of difficulty. I think we pull people to ourselves. I think the mistake is sometimes made that we think they're supposed to be with us forever and ever and ever, and that isn't always the case. Sometimes it's just, you know, to be supportive at that particular point in time, and then everybody moves on their journeys, you know, keeps going on their own pathways. And sometimes we get confused and we think that, this person is here and they're going to be with me the rest of my life, and they're a soulmate. And sometimes people who are just there to be compassionate and helpful are mistaken for soulmates. And, you know, that can be a sticky business, but it does happen, and it usually sorts itself out, I guess. Okay. You know, I think we're going to end the show early because there have been no calls. I don't know if the switchboard is... I know the switchboard is open because we're on it, and we have definitely talked our way through hour 15 minutes. I think we're going to just say thank you, everybody, for coming. Do you have any final words, Rachel?
Well, I can certainly share a story about soulmates and energetic vibration if you'd like one.
Sure.
Barbara.
Absolutely.
Okay. This is going back about a year ago, and I was traveling around being a gypsy as usual, and working in all sorts of lovely little shops and places all along the East Coast, and I was doing a lot of workshops. And what I found was I'd do these great workshops and be so high afterwards, just almost electrified with energy.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I'd go on my way home, I'd stop at the grocery store or whatever, and I found that people kept coming up to me and talking to me and asking for my phone number. And I thought it was just a very interesting thing. And I thought, well, okay. And one night, you know, for a long time, one of my closest friends would always say, I was at the time I had met her. I worked at a traditional job. I had a 9-to-5. And she was interested in the fact that I did fair, so she came to see me at a fair. And she came over to me and said, "My God, you're beautiful when you're here." And I went, "I beg your pardon," you know. And she said, "No," she said, "well," she said, "you always look nice at work," she said, "but somehow you're toned down at work, you know, almost plain. And when you're here," she said, "you're so full of energy and you're so vibrant and you look so beautiful." She said, "I think it must be because you're in your element." And that was the first time I ever had anything like that happen. And what I noticed is when I do this work, especially workshops or classes, I tend to have a glow. This is what my clients tell me all the time. And I find that, and my dog is agreeing with me in the background. And anyway, I found that this one particular, like, 6-month period, I was doing a lot of classes and a lot of workshops, and men and women were coming and asking me out. And I thought, well, this is interesting. What is up with this? And it was just, I just found that they were attracted when I was in such a kind of a passionate place of doing something that I loved.
Oh, yeah.
That it was an interesting period. And I also found that I was attracting a lot of business owners or entrepreneurs that also had, you know, I guess were along the same vibration, that had their own businesses and were working very hard to create a vision or a dream.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just interesting. And very most interesting time period.
Well, you know, that's, you know, like I was saying earlier, when you're doing something that you have passion for, when you are excited about what you're doing and who you are, you radiate such an amazing energy, and it's even caught on film, and it's really amazing, because I know I had to have new headshots taken, and I went and they posed me very, 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 very regally, and they you know, and it was, I saw the pictures. It was, you know, it was scary. And I said to them, you know, somebody wanted to know if you could read animals that are alive, and certainly that is true, and you don't have to have the animal in the room in order to get it read. So if you want Rachel to read your animal, I suggest you call in. So anyhow, I found that when pictures were taken of me and I was posed, I looked like I was in the wax museum. And it was really, you know, uncomfortable. And I said to them, you know, I don't take a good picture. I don't really like having my picture taken, and I avoid it at all costs. And so, but I said to them, I am, how do I put this? I am an animated person. So to take a picture of me posed takes away, I don't know, 90% of what my spirit is experiencing. And so they said to me, okay, go ahead, be animated and see what happens. And I just looked at them and I said, okay, so we got to talk about stuff. And so we started talking and I started playing around. And the pictures that they took were phenomenal, because they caught me, you know, they caught me in a place, in a position where you know, I was vibrantly expressing something, and it was so much more alive and more it had sparkle to it, I guess is the best way to put it. So, you know, it's really amazing that when you are expressing stuff that you're passionate about, when you really love what you're doing, then all sorts of wonderful stuff happens, and quite often you do attract people that are in the same aspect. Okay, we got a caller here. See, we threatened to end, and we get a caller. Hi, this is Barbara. You're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Barbara. It's Eileen.
Hi,
Rachel. How are you?
Hi, Eileen.
Okay, I have a dog that it's a Parisa Canario. And it's like, you just don't understand what this dog wants. It's really hard to handle. And could you, you know, it's downstairs in the basement with my husband, so it's, you know, it's not up here.
Okay,
can we have a name? Does the dog have a name?
Oh, God, I can't think of the dog's name. Don't
have
mind me.
I've
got fibromyalgia. I think I'm going. God, what's the dog's name? What's the dog's name? Yeah. Athena. Oh, God, how could I forget that? I'm always yelling, Athena.
How long have you had this dog?
Over a year.
Oh,
don't mind me. I've got, you know, like, I've got fibromyalgia, and sometimes I'm just brain dead.
Okay. Rachel?
Okay, Eileen, about how old is the dog?
Dog's what, about a year and a half?
Okay.
Over 2 years, he says.
Okay. All right. Hold on 1 second. Let me tap in.
I'm getting your dog a reading.
What?
Well, first of all, I think you're dealing with several different aspects, because I do, when I touch in with the dog's energy, the dog really is all over the place.
Yeah.
You have a really high energy breed or high energy dog with also a very kind of anxious breed. So this is a dog that's going to need a lot of exercise. Okay. A lot of exercise, also a lot of discipline.
It's hard to discipline that animal because she does what she wants. And I mean, you know, like I cook for this dog and she picks, you know, it's like 1, 2, 3 dinner, you know. I mean, it won't eat. It'll just go until I cook what it wants.
See, the other thing that you're also fighting with, Eileen, is animals. And Barbara, I don't know if you've encountered this, but in my practice, I encounter all the time that animals like to live up to their names. And you've chosen Athena. Is that what? Goddess of war?
Goddess of
war,
that's,
yes. Which may be a problem.
Yes.
You know, you may need a name change or a nickname. I had similar issues, and now we're just going on an etheric level here, but I had a husky that came with the name Czar, and he fought like he was king. I had to slightly change his name and also deal with some of the other issues of what he needed physically. You also have a very young animal, okay? So I'm going to go, it's not going to sound very glamorous, but I'm going to go with the fact that you have a very strong-willed breed, a young animal that's basically a teenager,
right?
In people terms, that is going to, you know, is going to rebel if they don't have the proper discipline or exercise, okay? And I'm going to also say best way around this is going to be dog obedience, you know?
Dog
and now,
obedience.
Yeah. Because
do you hear him laughing?
Yes, yeah. I do. Well, I really believe in that because animals really, there's a shared respect that happens when they can look to you as a leader.
Well, the dog respects me. It's my husband that, I mean, I could sit there and, like, take the food out of this dog's mouth and there wouldn't be a problem. I think I'm a little more alpha than my husband is, but, like, she attacked him. And, I mean, you know, and this was over food. And yet she loves him to death.
She won't go to sleep unless
she's dead. Oh, yeah, that's another thing, sleep. You know, she won't sleep. And she's, you know, driving him crazy.
Is she just up all night pacing, crying?
She goes around in circles all the time.
Okay.
I know she needs more exercise, but the thing is, I think he lost about 40 pounds because, you know, playing with her.
Mm-hmm.
Because he, you know, plays rough with her, but.
I call her baby. I would call her baby. I have a feral cat that was called Skitsy because she was schizophrenic, and she was. And I've started to call her Buttercup. And it's amazing how much calmer she is as Buttercup than she was as Skitsy.
Okay.
So
Athena was a bad name. He picked it because, you know, it was, I mean, he's into Vikings and things like that, and like.
Yeah, I'd call her baby. I'd make her your baby. I think Rachel's right, though, and I do feel that you might want to also hire a dog walker or somebody who can go out and walk the dog for an hour or so every day, just so that it's not just you two who are you know, training her. You got an amazing alpha dog here, and dogs,
yes.
dogs are pack animals, and they respect who you know, the head of the herd, and that would be you, pack, sorry,
right.
Head of the pack, and so they're wrestling with your husband to be second in command, and it sounds like she's winning.
Yeah.
Do you know the sound that the dogs are, that the head of the pack makes, you know, the burp, you know, that kind of a grunt?
Yeah.
That's how they are told to, you know, and my husband and I, when we had a German Shepherd, had to learn how to do that because the dog respected that and just absolutely not cringed, but she stopped what she was doing when we did that.
So we go rough.
No, not rough. It's more of a huff. It's a huh. And it absolutely, you know, and you don't overuse it. And, you know, I think you're at a point here. I totally agree with Rachel that you need to get somebody in there who can help you to sort of pull her back and pull her down. And the going in circles is frustration when they
okay.
do that. And so she's frustrated. But I think you have a wonderful dog there.
Yeah, she's a great dog. It's just that she's like, I mean, it's a shame because they overbred this dog, and she has top molars, and she's got her canines, but no bottom molars. So feeding her is difficult, you know, because everything's got to be cut up. She can't eat like dog food or anything like that, and she drives me crazy because the cats eat tuna, so she wants tuna.
Well, yeah,
you know, and she used to love spaghetti, and now she doesn't want anything to do with spaghetti. But it's like eeny meeny miny mo feeding her.
Have you talked to the vet, because you may actually even want to. There are. Wonderful.
The vet's petrified of her.
I'd go to another vet. There are tranquilizers that I had a bipolar cat that I medicated for 3 years to get her through a tough time. And
it
helped.
I didn't want to go to medication, but she's like so hyper.
Yeah, I change vets. You know, anytime a vet is afraid of a dog, that's a scary thing. And they sense fear. So I'd find another vet. Where do you live?
In Pennsylvania, in the mountains.
Has to be, you know, somebody suggested a homeopathic vet. I would look for a net.
I was given her, I forget the name of the pill. It's all homeopathic, you know, things in it. I have to get more of that.
Yeah, I think she needs help. But I think she is very retrievable, and I think this is a really good dog. I really do. But I would absolutely, and I have 8 cats, so and I've had dogs too. So that it really, really okay, wet down dry food and use the juice from the tuna to mix into it. That's from Chris.
I do that with the cat food because it's tiny. I can't get tiny enough, you know, dog food, because she has a habit of just swallowing everything and because she can't chew it.
You also can take, you know, do you have a pestle and a, you can grind it down so that it's almost like
she won't eat it. She, you know, I've tried different things with her. Now she loves what is it, the sweet potatoes. She could go through bags of them. She loves sweet potatoes.
Huh.
And, like,
okay.
I try, you know, giving her a lot of protein. I mean, she eats, like, regular meals, for God's sake. She loves string beans.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, somebody said green beans. Yeah, I really try to, you know, like, watch what I'm giving. Because when she came to us, she was, oh my God, 3 months old, and they gave her to me because they figured she's dying and that I'm good with animals. So what I did is I went through her breed and all the things that were wrong with the breed, and you know that, you know, like you can't feed this dog like a normal dog. You just can't do it. I mean, she needs a lot of protein. She needs, you know, like vegetables. you know, and things like that. No, she likes meat, Raven. She definitely loves meat. But, you know, so, I mean, it cost me a small fortune. I mean, I go through, my God, about 20, 30 pounds of chicken a month just on the dog.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, she's... And if she doesn't want chicken that night, she'll just, like, go on strike. Like, I won't eat until you give me what I want.
Well, if she gets hungry enough, she'll eat. Go ahead, Rita.
No, she doesn't. She doesn't. She will sit there. I've already, you know, like, put a plate in front of her and tried giving, you know, let her go close to 2 days, and she would not eat. And I just thought, you know, finally I gave in. Because I thought, you know, like, you know, come on, she's going to get sick if she doesn't eat something. So then I gave her the tuna, you know, and mushroom soup and egg noodles. She, you know, she loves noodles, but she loves egg noodles.
Eileen, will she, is she particularly concerned with what you're eating? Like,
well,
for
she
dinner?
Most of the time she does eat what we're eating for dinner.
Okay. Well, because I was going to say there are several... cookbooks out. I believe Three Dog Bakery has one on how to make meals that are nutritious and tasty for both you and the dog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. I do have some cookbooks on Kindle that I make her treats outside of the, you know, sweet potato treats. I make her treats and things like that.
Okay. The other aspect is she won't get sick if she doesn't eat for a couple days. That's kind of a big myth, probably created by man. Dogs in the wild are used to feast or famine. You know, think about it. Packs of wolves will eat deer or caribou or buffalo or something, and, you know, then may not eat for 2 or 3 days. And some of the top trainers in the world will actually not feed dogs during the day while they're training them and only give them food while they're being trained.
Okay, so they won't be so upset with the... Yeah, because I never know what
strike,
to do. Yeah.
Yeah, she has you wrapped right around her paw.
Yeah, I know. Believe me, I know.
And you might just try, you know, making what you make for her, and if she doesn't eat it, fine. I would test it and see how long she goes. I doubt it would be longer than 3 days or so.
I pretty much know what she wants at this point. So what is it, you know, like, she basically gets the tuna, but she likes the cat food because it's tiny little, and what I do is mix that in with, you know, like can of tuna and the juice and everything, and you know, she loves that. I mean, this crazy dog, you know, I made her steak, and she didn't want it. And yet other times she would love the heck out of it. Things you know, that she loves one minute, she doesn't, you know, love the next. So, I mean, she drives me nuts.
Well, I think you two have a bond, and I really, really think that there is a wonderful linkage here, and I think you and the dog have been together in past lives.
Well, it's so, like I said before, I can sit there and take food out of her mouth. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I can sit there and push the food, you know, like closer to her in her plate and things like that. And I know a lot of dogs, you know, will flip out if you do that. But
my husband,
forget it. Do not touch my food.
But you're the pack leader, and actually you're the one that really, really could train this dog if you put your mind to it. You really can. It's just that, you know, she's arguing with you for leader of the pack, and she's winning.
Yeah. Well, I don't have enough time because, like, I'm going through a lot in my own life right now, and I've got all kinds of ferals that I'm taking care of and two cats of my own, and everybody's fighting for attention, so, you know, like, and I'm only one person. I guess I will have to start spending more time with her. but this is his dog. I didn't want a dog. And I said, if you take this dog, it's your responsibility. And the thing is, you know, I should have known better because, like, now it's mine.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like she picked you.
Yeah, I know.
I do believe, you know, I'm with Barbara on this one. I believe that you have a dog that is workable, that is trainable. And I think once you kind of are better able to fulfill her needs, what she needs as far as exercise goes and discipline, I think that will kind of open up this whole new level of who this dog is. Because I do believe she does want to please you.
Yeah,
I
know that. She does love me. She loves this food. Well, what I figured on getting, you know, because I'm in the process of a move, a treadmill, and, like, mm-hmm. let her go on the treadmill.
Well, you know, dogs, this is a work dog.
I know.
This dog doesn't have a job.
Mm-hmm. What kind of a job am I supposed to give the dog?
Well,
I mean, she's got a job. She's a watchdog.
Yeah, no. This is like a shepherd, or I mean, I keep relating. I keep seeing a German shepherd. So this is a work dog. This dog has to know that they have an important job in helping you, whether it's picking stuff up around the yard, whatever it is. This dog has to have a job, and I think if you really can't spend the time with the dog, then you are totally obligated to find a person that will spend the time with a dog, because this is a good dog. This is a really good dog. And I know when Patrick passed, he and our shepherd had bonded, and my dog needed a man. And I had to find a man who needed a dog, because I couldn't do 7-mile walks every day with a dog and stuff like
right.
that. And that's what she needed, and it broke my heart to find, to find a home for her. And people kept saying, oh, I know a woman. I said, no, she has to have a man. She has to have a man.
No, I understand that.
And you know, I think this dog easily can, not easily, you're going to have to work at it. And I know that, I know that your time is, you know, very limited, but perhaps you can get someone in there to help you train the dog. Because I don't think your husband can do it.
No, he's too easygoing, and you know he's. I said to him, you know, you've got to start being more alpha. Well, after she attacked him, he did start to become more alpha. Like I said to him, you know, like what you don't understand is she's craving attention, and even being bad, you yelling at her is still attention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, start ignoring some of the things, you know, like when she's barking and she wants to play and playtime is over, you know, especially in the middle of the night and things like that, you know. I said, don't pay attention. Now she's got this thing, she wants to go out. You know, she has access to go in, you know, because I have two houses. So she wants to leave this house because she has the house next door, you know, which is Ken's. It still has all the furniture and everything in it. And she'll leave here and go to sleep in the house next door. It's just she doesn't want to be in this house. She wants, you know, and she's got, like, toys all downstairs and everything. She's not allowed upstairs, but. I know, this is a spoiled dog.
No, this is a sensitive dog. Have you cleansed your house? And I'm not saying have you cleaned it. Have you cleansed it? She may
no.
be reacting to a spirit energy that's there that you don't feel. Rachel, you step in here because I'm not really sure. But it
well,
does
yeah,
feel
I it. Had somebody die in there recently.
In your
well,
house?
Well, it was a year and a half ago.
Okay, I think Rachel, step in here because I really
okay.
think the dog's reacting to the spirit, but I'm not sure.
No, I think you're right, Barbara. I think there is spirit activity there. I also feel like, don't forget, I mean, we don't necessarily need someone to die in a house for there to be negative or heavy energy in a house. It can be someone who's sick, who's going through a bad time, who's depressed. Arguments, things like that can all create an energy called a thought form, you know, that can kind of hover around and make a place feel heavier or darker.
Gonna recommend a couple of things. One is staging your place. Another is getting some Himalayan salt lamps because they naturally ionize the environment and the atmosphere. If your dog will go next door and sleep, I'd let your dog sleep next door.
I'm selling the places, so I mean, because like six bedrooms is too much. We're getting too old for this, and scaling down a little bit.
No, I got that, but what she's doing is reacting to an energy that you're not feeling, and that could be some of the hyperness that you're seeing.
Okay.
So I would sage your place. I would get some Himalayan salt lamps in there, and they're very cheap. Don't spend a fortune. And I think she does need training on top of it. But it feels to, I mean, if my cats sense something about someone, they go nuts. And you know, I won't necessarily notice it, but I have learned that if the CAT scan is set off, I will ask someone to come back at another time or do a phone reading or something, because my cats go nuts if somebody is unbalanced or if there's something wrong with them. And
cats are pretty intuitive.
I have learned to pay attention to them. I think your dog is sensing something.
Okay.
So I know there are people that will come and cleanse out houses. I would, if you're going to have somebody do that, really check them out thoroughly before you.
Oh, I've got two sticks of sage right here.
Okay, and I would sage it. I would at least for a while let the dog sleep next door, because I think the dog probably wants to sleep. It's just that the whatever it is keeping it awake.
Okay.
Well, that dog was
basically raised in that house. I don't know whether.
Go home.
I
would cleanse your house, and I would for a while, for a very short while, let it sleep in the other house. I'd give you a nice sleep, and the dog will get a night's sleep. And maybe when the dog is rested, be easier to work with.
Yeah. Okay, I'll try some of that.
Yeah, pay attention, because they really do try to tell us stuff. It's just that they don't talk English, and it's hard.
I know. I designated time for her where I would play with her, you know, out in the yard. And, you know, I haven't in the last month because, like I said, I've been so busy at other things. And, you know, I do feel bad about it. And I think she does miss the playtime that I had with her.
Probably. I would love to see her go visiting someone and see if she sleeps in their house.
That's hard. I mean, she can't even be around other animals.
Okay.
She goes nuts.
Well, she has to be an only dog then, but I mean, there are people like that too. But do pay attention to stuff like that. I think she's trying to tell you what's wrong.
Okay.
And you know, it could be as easy as just that there's heavy energy there you need to get rid of. I'm not saying you're haunted or anything like that. I'm saying there's heavy energy.
Oh no, I know there's energy here. I know that.
Well, give it a shot. See what happens.
Yeah, well, the person who's she probably, you know, is upset with hates dogs. Hello? Oh.
Hi.
I thought I lost you.
Nope, we're here.
You know, hate the one that died hated dogs. Loved the cats, but hated dogs.
Love him.
Actually, it was petrified of dogs.
But she
never met him. She came after he died.
Okay, no, I don't think you're haunted, but I do think there's heavy energy there. Again, I don't think there's a spirit there, but there's an energy there, and that easily can be cleaned out and cleansed, and you know, but I would let her sleep next door for here and there, maybe every other night or something like that for a while.
Yeah.
Eileen, dogs will channel our energy as well and channel and kind of carry that on. So just like we get stressed throughout our day and can't let go of whatever happened at work, they will hold on to that. And if she's frustrated anyway or has a high level of energy that's not being channeled, that will keep her up at night, you up at night. So it's probably one of the really good reasons why she's choosing to sleep next door.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll do that tomorrow then, just, you know, sage the whole place.
Good idea.
So that means from top to bottom, right, attic and all.
You got it. Well, you don't have to crawl around in the attic, but I'd serve.
No. The attic, you know, is basically like two rooms.
Yeah, I do.
Believe
that.
Me, I wouldn't crawl.
Okay. but, you know, seriously, do please get back and let us know.
Okay.
How this works out. I really, you know, and if there's anything that I can do to help, let us know.
Okay, I'll definitely get back to you. I really appreciate all the advice you gave me.
You're welcome. Take care now.
All right, you too. Thank you. Thank you, Rachel. Bye, Barbara.
Thanks. Okay. Our work here is done. I'm going to call it an evening. Thank you so much, Rachel. This was such a neat show. It's too bad that there weren't callers out there, but I think we put a lot of great information out there. So I think we've done a good job here.
I think we did too. Thank you, Barbara.
Okay. Good night now.
Good night.